Chase and TD in today for Stillman and Company. 102.5, 106.3, the game. On this Fireball Hot Take Friday, you can weigh in on anything that we're talking about. 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're going to be joined by Chad Withrow from Outkick here in just a few minutes, as I'm sure he will have some things to say about the Vols winning and Kentucky losing. Got some tight ones right now in day number two. Yale University will not go away as they currently lead Auburn 44-43. That one about 15:39 to go in the second half. This one just in the around the same amount of time, 15 and a half minutes to go, second half. Colorado leads Florida 57-56. So some tight games involving SEC teams right now. As you heard in the update, Marquette defeated Western Kentucky 87-69 earlier today. So the Hilltoppers fall in that one. And more games coming up a little later tonight. Texas A&M and Nebraska will tip off at the end of this hour. That one taking place down in Memphis at the FedEx Forum. Duke and Vermont at 6:10. Then you got Purdue, number one seed in Grambling State, as Grambling State got their first tournament win the other night. Alabama and Charleston at 6:35. Houston at 8:20 against Longwood. That also in Memphis, being TD's pick. And then James Madison and Wisconsin, a late game as well. Then TCU, Utah State, Grand Canyon with Bryce Drew in St. Mary's. We say hello to Chad Withrow from Outkick, who joins us now. Chad, I don't know what we're going to talk about. How you feeling? How you doing?
Doing well through one round, but, you know, as a Tennessee basketball fan, I could say that a lot of years after one round of the tournament. So we'll see how the rest of the weekend plays out. But I will say this, Chase, I'm doing a lot better than Kentucky fans today, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get to that in a second, but we'll talk about your Vols first. I feel like that the way that game played out is exactly how it needed to play out, to not necessarily shut some people up, but to calm people down. Now, they got to go and do it again against Texas, which they're, I think, a six-point favorite against. But I thought that the way they played against St. Peter's is exactly how they needed to play.
Yeah, I would agree. They were really good, and that's how, you know, a number one or number two seed should come out and look. We saw it with UConn today, too, where they just came out and easily handled business from the very start. And Tennessee did that last night. I was impressed. I thought it was important for Santiago Vescovi to hit a couple threes because both him and Josiah Jordan-James are so lost on offense right now. And James didn't score last night, only took two shots, and still looks lost. But I thought it was big for Vescovi to hit a couple of shots. So everything was good. You know, Dalton Connect looked good. I thought Ziegler was really good. Adu, much better than that SEC tournament against Tolu Smith at Mississippi State. So check, check, check with everything in round one. I will say, and I'm not trying to be, you know, Debbie Downer on anything, but that performance was so easy and so well done by Tennessee. It reminded me of 2 years ago where they stomped Longwood in the first game, and they went out in round two and lost to an underachieving Michigan team that had a ton of talent. Well, now Tennessee stomps their first-round opponent 2 years later, and in round two, they're going to get an underachieving Texas team with a ton of talent. So I do think there's some similarities between Michigan and Texas. I'll also say I don't think there's a bunch of similarities between that Tennessee team and this one, namely because this Tennessee team has Dalton Connect, who is a consensus first-team All-American.
I know you like talking Vols, and I get it, but I would imagine the only thing that you – can compare to you talking Vols and the excitement is the excitement of a Kentucky loss. So I got to ask you, you look at this loss to Oakland, do you think that signals the end of the road for Calipari?
Fire Cal!
TD, I think that it should. I think it certainly, it's launched a lot of debates about the merits of John Calipari and the merits of a lifetime contract, $9 million a year, and most importantly, a $33 million buyout. How angry are you if you are a Kentucky booster and you're a millionaire and Mitch Barnhart comes to you and says, hey, really need to, you know, correct that mistake and move on. Will you give me $10 million to help make that happen and I'll go to two or three other guys and make sure we can get that buyout money? Because it is Mitch Barnhart who signed this contract into existence. And maybe these Kentucky boosters are so angry they're going to Mitch Barnhart and saying, I'll pledge $3 or $4 million if you can get it from everyone else to help buy out John Calipari. But I think his biggest issue is, and we saw in the post-game interview last night, this unwillingness to accept responsibility and this lack of flexibility also, right? He's a guy who wants to do it his way, and that's bringing in freshmen and bringing in one-and-done players, and he hasn't really adapted to the college game over the last 7 to 10 years where we've seen teams that are older having more and more success. Mm-hmm. And even last night, he's already hyping up his freshman class coming in, which is very talented and will feature multiple NBA players again, and saying, well, we probably should bring in an older player in the transfer portal, but maybe not. Maybe we'll be good enough. And I hear that, and I think, yeah, he still just really hasn't figured it out, that he's got to adjust and change. And if he's not going to do it now, he's never going to do it. If that's the case, I think you got to think long and hard about it if you're Mitch Barnhart.
Yeah, and I mean, look, to me, Texas A&M proved, and I know they got different kind of money, but if things aren't working out, you can buy out a coach. So I don't view the whole $33 million buyout, which that's their fault to begin with, as you mentioned, is a reason not to do it. You can put it together because right now you have the most overrated coach in college basketball and you're the most overrated program in college basketball because you haven't been to the Final Four in 9 years, and obviously we know that they don't have the championship to show for it either.
Yeah, I saw something on social media last night. In the 2020s decade, Fairleigh Dickinson has 2 NCAA tournament wins, Oral Roberts has 2, and Kentucky has 1. So that pretty much sums up Kentucky these last 5 years. They didn't make it in 2021. They made it in 2022 and lost to St. Peter's in the first round. They won a game last year, then lost to K-State in the second round. Then they get bounced by Oakland in the first round this year. And Chase, the perfect example of what you're talking about with buyout money and coming up with it if you really want to do it and you're that motivated, is right down the road at Vanderbilt. Jeff Goodman's reporting that Jerry Stackhouse was $25 million for the buyout. I've heard anything from $13 to $18 million, but that Jeff Goodman report was the first time I've ever heard $25 million. So if Vandy, that, let's face it, we don't really know how much they care about sports or basketball given recent years, but if they can come up with $25 million, first off, that makes me believe, A, they do really care about basketball, and B, Kentucky can certainly come up with $33 million if Vandy can pay Jerry Stackhouse $25 million to walk away.
So I definitely wanted to bring this up with you because Joe and I got this text this morning on our show of, you know, basically you're sitting there saying that Kentucky has won 3 championships in 30 years and all of that in basketball. The Vols have only won 1 championship in 50 years in football or whatever it's been, you know, in 98. So what, like, are you saying that they're overrated too? I think the expectations are completely different for Kentucky basketball and Tennessee football.
Yeah. Look, Kentucky's the gold standard of basketball. I mean, that's – just ask a Kentucky fan. And they should be. Like, I'm not sitting here saying they're being ridiculous for being mad at John Calipari. I'd be furious with them too if I were a Kentucky fan. They've been to more NCAA tournaments than anyone. Tennessee is a top 10 or 15 all-time football program. They're not 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, right? And even if you are a Kentucky hater, they're in the top 3 or 4 all-time basketball programs, right? So, yeah, I think the expectations are very different. The landscape is very different in both sports. And, look, Tennessee's got a very good historical football program. They're not Kentucky basketball good. And I think even Tennessee fans would have to acknowledge that, that Kentucky basketball is in a different, you know, they're in a completely different league than Tennessee football with the expectations. But those expectations continue to slip. And Kentucky fans, Chase, have been very patient with John Calipari, more patient than they are with most coaches. I saw that patience end last night. Just go online, go to a Kentucky message board, listen to Kentucky Sports Radio postgame. You can see that their patience officially ended with that loss to Oakland last night.
Look, you talked about how college basketball is different, right? Because you have these groups of players, they stick together more. So as a result, you know, you got a St. Mary's that got a number 5 ranking in their bracket. You got Creighton, a number 3. Who are some underdog teams that you look here? Who are some Cinderella teams? You know, obviously Oakland is one, but who are some that you would think of?
Well, one is Grand Canyon.
Yes.
With former Vanderbilt coach Bryce Drew, who's playing later tonight. I really like them. You mentioned St. Mary's, TD. I like that St. Mary's program, but I really like Grand Canyon. I've watched a couple of their games this year. They play an up-tempo style, and they got some players. So I like them as a possible 12-5 upset. The other one that everyone is talking about is James Madison. Mm-hmm. We saw them beat Michigan State and Tom Izzo on opening night of the college season, and I think they ended up 34-3 on the year. I think they lost three games all season. They play the 12-5 game against Wisconsin, and then if they win, they play Duke, likely. I like James Madison getting to the Sweet 16.
Ooh.
Now, I say this as someone whose bracket is just okay right now. It's not completely busted. But I had Drake in the Sweet 16 also. So that's another 10 seed that I liked advancing, and they blew it last night. But James Madison and Grand Canyon are two that I would watch tonight and watch closely.
Our buddy Ricky has said he'll pass on that one. He thinks they're too much of a public dog.
Who's too much of a public dog?
James Madison. James Madison.
Oh, James Madison. See, this is what I started to worry about, and Ricky knows this also. This is what I started to worry about with Samford, because I was in on Samford quickly because I knew Kansas had all the injury issues. And then when Kevin McCullough was ruled out, everyone jumped on Samford, whether it be just picking them to upset or betting on them, and I immediately hated the pick once that happened. I'm not going with UConn to the Final Four because everybody has UConn going to the Final Four. And I think since 2016, we have not seen a team that's the defending national champion get out of the first weekend in the tournament. The last time it happened was Duke. Duke won it all in 2015 and then got to the Sweet 16 in 2016. Since then, the defending national champion has been bounced in the first or second round of the tournament. I've got UConn getting to the second weekend, but I think I had them losing to Auburn in the Sweet 16. So I'm waiting for some craziness to happen, but so far really the wackiest thing we've seen was Oakland beating Kentucky last night.
You're busting my bracket, man, talking about UConn, you know what I mean? But I want to ask you about Houston. What are your thoughts on Houston? I have them winning it all. How do you think that looks?
Yeah, Shedd is awesome for Houston. Kelvin Sampson plays a style that I think is conducive to success in the NCAA tournament. The knock on him is kind of the same knock on Rick Barnes, that you know what you're going to get defensively from a Kelvin Sampson team, but not always offensively. And that's kind of been the knock on Rick Barnes. This team is good on offense. I mean, look, there were three teams all year in UConn, Purdue, and Houston that were quite a bit ahead of everyone else. Right, they were three clear-cut number one seeds, really going back to early February, and they never wavered. So I put Houston in that group with UConn and Purdue, and then right outside of that, you've got North Carolina, Arizona, Tennessee, Iowa State, Marquette. You know, you could put the three seeds in that group also, but they're kind of all bunched together. There's probably four or five teams in that group that you could say they could win it all, but they're in that group behind Purdue, UConn, and Houston. I've got a ton of respect for Houston. I don't look too much into them getting blown out in the Big 12 championship by Iowa State.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people overvalue those conference tournament outcomes. I really don't. I think Tennessee and Mississippi State, quite frankly, show you a little bit of that. The way both teams played on the opposite ends in the NCAA tournament after Mississippi State looked like a national championship contender when they played Tennessee last week in Nashville. So I really like Houston. I think I've got them in the Elite Eight. But we get our first chance to see him in the tournament coming up tonight.
Hey, one more for you, because I can't really figure this one out. It tips off here in just a little bit, too. A&M and Nebraska tonight. I want to lean A&M, and I like, you know, what they've done, but what do you think about this one?
I keep going back and forth on it. I think I picked A&M in my bracket. I know Nebraska is like a one-point favorite, maybe 1.5.
Yep.
Tomen Aga for Nebraska is a wild man. Watch that guy play. He will either shoot Nebraska into a 20-point win or, I mean, go 1-for-14 from the floor and not stop shooting. He is just fascinating to watch play the game of basketball. He's difficult to even understand how he's good when you watch him play at times, but he can get it done. He's a flamethrower when he heats up. So that's an exciting player to watch for Nebraska. This is very rare for the Huskers. I think it was 10 years ago was the last time they were in the tournament, even with Tim Miles as their head coach. This one tournament appearance got Fred Hoiberg a contract extension with the Huskers, so this is a big year for them. But I like the guard play. I love Boots Radford. I love Wade Taylor IV for Texas A&M. So I'm going to give them a slight advantage to get them over the hump against Nebraska.
Well, Chad, going to be fun. We'll see what the Vols can do tomorrow. Appreciate it, as always, and talk to you soon.
All right. Appreciate it, Chase. Thank you, guys.
Have a good one. Chad Withrow joining us from Outkick, talking some hoops with him. We'll give you a scoring update in just a few minutes here on Stillman & Company. Chase and TD in for Jared today. 102.5, 106.3 the game. Chase and TD in today for Stillman & Company. Got some tournament games going on. Auburn leads Yale 61-55. But I tell you what, Yale will not go away. They are not. And just when you think Auburn's pulling away, Yale comes fighting back. So that's one we're watching. Florida trails Colorado 75-69. Again, Florida not quite going away, but it was tied at 45 at the half, and Colorado has had a slight edge there in Indianapolis in the second half. Waiting on some other games to get underway. Just those two going on right now. What's about to tip off at the end of this hour will be Texas A&M and Nebraska down at the FedEx Forum in Memphis, and then Duke in Vermont in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Full schedule of games later on tonight. So definitely we'll be paying attention to that. Congratulations to the MTSU Blue Raiders women's team as they knocked off Louisville. They will advance to the next round. Right now, 94.9 The Fan, Baylor is up on Vanderbilt 14-4 in the NCAA women's basketball tournament. Is that one 4:50 to go in the first quarter? So keep you updated on all of that. But, you know, TD, you and I don't get to do this much. It's almost baseball season. Baseball is about to start. And I just saw Bob Nightingale, longtime baseball writer, putting out Major League Baseball has opened an investigation into Shohei Ohtani. Mm-hmm. His interpreter was let go because of gambling, and now there's stuff potentially connecting Shohei. This could get ugly.
It's interesting the way that kind of went up and down. Definitely have to shout out ESPN's Letitia Thompson for the reporting that she did. I mean, she was able to get the interpreter on the phone twice.
Yeah.
And give her two different stories. And initially the belief was that Shohei was funneling that money to cover his interpreter's gambling habits and things like that, his problem. And then it turns out that, wait a minute, no, that wasn't the case. And Ohtani didn't – now, this is just based off their reporting. Ohtani didn't fully understand or realize what was going on until they had a meeting. And then they had a meeting, and in that meeting, he got the revelation that that was what was happening. And that's when he charged him with the theft. And so now everything is just – ooh.
Look, ooh. I hope it's – I hope it's something as simple as that, because Shohei Ohtani's good for baseball.
Yeah.
The fact that you have a guy that is a, you know, elite pitcher and an elite hitter, which we haven't seen in a very, very long time.
Yep.
It's got the butts in seats factor for sure. And obviously, you know, I know he's moved LA teams, but, you know, staying in Los Angeles, it's good for the game to have a player like that.
Absolutely.
But like, the first thing I thought of when I, you know, when I heard about this was, man, like, this is all the rumors you heard about Jordan back in the day. And, like, is that why he went and played baseball for a couple of years? Because it was like the old rumor was that Stern had been like, look, go play baseball. You know, let this
let
blow
it cool
over,
off.
You know?
Yeah, let it cool. There were rumors that led into his dad's death.
Right, too. Right. There was a lot of stuff surrounding all of that. But I just, man, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you can really play this off as, I didn't know. I didn't know what was going on.
$4 million is an offer not to
to not know what's going on.
You know what I mean? You know? And I understand, like, he signed for, what, $500,000 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
$4 million is a lot to
so
really know what's going on with it.
I have a feeling this is going to take some twists and turns before it gets.
It could definitely take some
before
twists
it gets.
And turns.
It
could get ugly.
Oh yeah, it could. Ugly. Like, and you know that baseball's sitting there going, just like, really,
yeah,
like, we got these rules figured out. People are watching our games and liking our games and coming to
it's
our games.
Just not, right.
And, like, it's just, you know, we're finally back and feeling good. And one of our biggest, most popular players now is under investigation.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. It's just once you get there. But that doesn't change it for us. Like, I'm excited, obviously, me being a Braves fan, you being a Mets fan, the NL East.
Yeah.
Once again,
I mean, we know what it is. It's not up for grabs, man. The Braves are going. Well, it'll be interesting, Braves and Phillies, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to get it started again because,
no doubt.
You know, the Braves have, I think what they've done with their roster, you know, obviously they needed to work on pitching. That was what got them last year. They had the best lineup in the majors in a very, very long time, but the pitching got away from them and it ultimately led to their defeat, mm-hmm. you know, down the stretch and in the playoffs. I think they've addressed that, you know, with some of the moves that they've made. But how do you feel about your Mets?
And I love Willie's Mets. You know, listen, my guy, my favorite, well, one of my two favorite players in the league, Edwin Diaz, turned 30 today. You know,
well, happy birthday!
I wanted to cue up the Narcos, you know, the trumpets. Oh. I cannot wait. April 14th, we're going to see Doc's jersey retirement. June 1st is going to be Strawberries, but I can't wait to be in. I just would love to experience that Narco, like him coming. Yeah. I love it. But
do they still have the guy that comes out and plays it on the trumpet?
They play it over there. Yeah. Tommy Trumpet.
Yeah.
They had him Timmy Trumpet. They had him there a couple times, but that was just like a novelty thing.
Dun, ta, dun,
yeah, you know, that's so, yeah. It's dun, 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 yeah, and then just the way he comes running out just right to it. Back-to-back outings the last couple of days. His first one, he struck out the side. Yeah. So, look, I'm excited about that because that's something to be, you know, you have a guy to close the games out. I will say this, the J.D. Martinez signing is very interesting because, obviously, he was an all-star last year, outstanding DH. But it's a little different when you look at him as the DH because he never plays anything else,
yeah.
Right? Whereas some teams, like, they use the DH to funnel, hey, let's get Alonso a day off and let him DH, you know what I mean? But I wonder just with the baby Mets, right? Mark Vientos, one of my favorite baby Mets players, he was supposed to be the DH, and now, you know, obviously that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, pitching is going to be the hurdle. They have a pretty solid lineup, but pitching, that's going to be the problem, and they just don't have it, you know?
They traded off some pretty good pitchers last year.
And they got some good prospects. They got Acuna's little brother.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be good eventually, you know.
I mean, it's always hard to tell, but, I mean, I know some of the early looks at him is he might be better than his brother. And his brother's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Reigning and defending most valuable player.
Yeah, he's something special.
He is, but I will tell you, it might have been like you know, off the field and stuff, he's fine, but it's just there are sometimes like some of the decisions he makes, like when he doesn't run through a play at first, like in Snit used to pull him out, you know, it still does from time to time. And it's just like, dude, hustle every play.
Yeah, every
like play. That stuff drives me nuts.
Yep.
With that. And it's just, you know, kind of some of his attitude, but he's a heck of a player.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no denying it that he is. He's the reigning MVP, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the mix again.
Oh, absolutely.
This year. So,
yeah.
Well, that's cool. You're going to get to see Doc's jersey retire.
I can't. It's crazy. So, you know, the early part of my life, the first 12 years of my life, I lived in New York.
Okay.
That's why I'm a Mets fan from Philly.
You know what I mean?
But never got to see him pitch. Never.
Yeah.
I always, like, my aunt would take me to games, and it was always Ron Darling. Bob Ojeda, Sid Fernandez. Like, I never got to see Doc pitch.
Yeah.
And we talked earlier about the playoff atmosphere and how exciting it was. Man, when Doc pitched, they said that Shea Stadium was different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could feel it watching the game, but being there. So I can't wait to experience just a little bit of that. You know what I mean? When his jersey's retired.
Yeah. So I got to, when I was in eighth grade, we did our school trip to New York, and we saw, it was – mid-April, saw the Mets and the Cardinals at Shea Stadium.
Really?
I got to see Piazza.
Mike Piazza.
So I can say – and McGuire. McGuire was playing for the Cardinals. So I can say that I got to see Mike Piazza and Mark McGuire in the same game, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw Piazza play. Actually, the high school I graduated from, he went there. Yeah, which is crazy.
But yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, that'll be a lot of fun. Yale, again, not going away, trailing Auburn by 6, 68-62, about 5 minutes and change left in this one. So not going away. And then Florida, it's starting to get away from them. Colorado up 86-77 with about 6 minutes left in that game for Colorado. So those are the two games going on right now. I had to squeeze in a little baseball, get back into the Titans and much more. Chase and TD in for Stillman and Company today, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Chase and TD in today for Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Auburn leads Yale 70-66, 3:29 to go in that contest. Colorado continues to extend their lead, 94-81. Over the Florida Gators. So kind of resetting some of the Titans stuff that we got into. You have a prospect that you – again, I call them TD's darlings out of Missouri that you feel like would be a good fit, a potential candidate at 38. We talked about this earlier in the show, but reset who you think that is and why he'd be a good fit.
Yeah, so look, man, losing DeNico Autry to the Texans, that hurt the Titans.
Stings.
It hurt. They wanted to keep him, but they just weren't able to. What better way to replace him than with a younger version of him? And I think when you look at the versatility, and this is Darius Robinson, the Missouri. He had his pro day today, by the way. He is not scheduled for a top 30 visit as of now with the Titans or anything like that. But you look at the versatility as far as, you know, there were times where DeNico Autry lined up inside, outside. He even stood up and, you know, Autry is a bit no, their size is actually the same. They're both 6'5", 285.
Yeah.
Right? But heavy-handed, you know, guys, high-effort guys, guys that, for lack of better terms, they're goons. And you just tell them, like, look, man, this is your job on this play. Go mess stuff up, know, and that's what they do. And it's fun to watch players that have that energy and just have that mindset of just being like, I'm just going to wreck stuff.
It is my favorite thing in the world to watch usually a defensive player in the NFL just have that look on that on the face where you just go, I'm about to break you. Mm-hmm. I'm about to knock your head off. Yeah. Like looking at a dude across the line of like, and then all of a sudden you look down, and there's like a yellow puddle under the guy because like you just see the fear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's what they need. I mean, they need because you got Jeff Simmons that already has that, and I think I meant to ask you this earlier because I heard PK in the morning show talking about this the other day. They do, like, once you get your culture figured out and you get your locker room, I do think there is a place for some, as Pete Weber likes to say, shift disturbers.
Yeah.
Maybe insert another word there. But, a guy that's going to come in there and talk a little bit and have that. Now, Big Jeff is that guy. Like,
yeah, he's one of them.
You know, every now and then you need to be like, hey, Jeff, back up, man, you know. But – I'm okay with a guy that he might get popped for a 15-yarder every now and then if it's like a fight in hockey, like it's setting the tone of like you're not coming in here and messing with me.
You're not going to, yeah. And I, the thing that's interesting is it doesn't always have to be a premier player.
No.
You know who was a great example of that? Darren Bates, man.
Darren Bates, a great example.
You need X amount of Darren Bateses on your team. Like you need those guys, the IDGAF.
Right, you know
the acronym, what that stands for. You need those guys, right? But at the same time, you need a guy that can kind of corral that guy too, So, and that's honestly, that's where DeNico Autry was for Simmons.
Right.
So I'm just curious how that's going to work. But, and I think that's what, we talked earlier about kind of the missed opportunities. I think a Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would have been like he's that.
Yeah.
That goon, like that level of player that you got to have like that.
But you got to have you got to have the locker room that's strong enough that when you got to pull back, you can pull him back.
Exactly.
And like, honestly, that was Kevin Byard. Kevin Byard was perfect for that of if it's Jeff or it's somebody else that, you know, they're too much in the moment. That's like you grab him by the pads and go, hey, come on
down.
Get back in the huddle.
Down
the huddle.
Yeah.
Right.
You do have to have that.
But there is a place in the game for guys like that. Mm-hmm. Vrabel loved guys like that. Yeah. Like, you know, like what he used to say that are violent and, you know, like just that kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And you can see it on both sides. Like Kevin Mawai spent his whole career being that kind of player.
Yeah.
Like I remember the players did a poll one time of like dirtiest players in the league and he was like top three.
Simmons would be up there.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like especially offensive linemen, they're in there grabbing and, you know, they're like all that. Don't know what they're grabbing and all that stuff. But, like, I'm okay with some guys like that. I mean, I don't know, besides Jeff, who would they have right now? I don't know if they really have that guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they
like do. Like, Courtland Finnegan had some of that in him.
A lot. Very much so.
Ask D-Mace. Courtland and D-Mace, you know, he'd chirp with the best of them, but like I'll never forget Derek and Courtland getting into it, and then Courtland and Andre Johnson getting into it, and it was just like you need that every now and then.
Yeah, it's a tone setter, like you said,
because you can walk the walk and talk the talk.
Yep.
Yale will not go away. Now a 2-point game, 70-68, 2:38 to go. Yale at the line, looking to try and tie this up, and. This is going to get interesting. And what a texter just said on our text line, man, if the SEC goes 1-5 through the first six games, that's no bueno. Well,
Not looking good for Florida.
They're down
10.
Yep. 94-84.
3:45 left.
I mean, when you can't hit easy layups, you don't deserve to win a game.
Yeah.
Tied at 70, Yale and Auburn. 2:38 to go in this game.
Yikes.
I mean, can you imagine if Kentucky, Florida, Auburn, Mississippi State,
South Carolina
all go down. You got Texas A&M that's about to play Tennessee.
Mississippi State, did you say them?
Yeah. They lost yesterday.
Michigan State, yeah.
Well, you don't bet against Izzo in the first round.
Unless you're Joe Rexroad,
which is dumb. But, yeah, definitely a good one between Yale and Auburn. It's Chase and TD on this Fireball Hot Take Friday. Come back. And again, if you're tuning in looking for Vanderbilt baseball, they have moved that game to tomorrow. It'll be a doubleheader beginning at noon, pregame at 11:45 with Andrew Allegretta and company. So a doubleheader tomorrow as they decided to beat the weather. It is raining. Let's and move down. That. So TD and I will come back. We'll put a bow on things on this Friday. 102.5, 106.3 the game. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport in today for Jared Stillman, along with Ian Safar. Yale leads Auburn 73-72, 55 seconds to go.
Oof.
Florida is showing some fight, down by 6 now. Colorado up 96-90, 1:40 to go in
Colorado
that game.
Colorado has possession.
Yeah, Colorado does have possession, but
got to get that rebound.
I know. I watch some of these games and it's just like fundamental basketball. Hit your free throws, hit your layups, rebound, you know, box out. Like all these things. So some close ones in the NCAA tournament. Texas A&M and Nebraska also about to tip off here in just a little bit. But just putting a bow on that. We've had a lot of different things today. Predators on a 16-game point streak. Look to make it 17. They've already broken the franchise record, but I tell you what, coming in here tomorrow with Detroit as a team that's fighting for their spot in the playoffs, you know the crowd is going to be into it. It's going to be a playoff-type atmosphere. I'd love to see the Predators just knock them around the ice.
Yeah, I would love to see it too, man. And like I said, the energy in that building, it's addictive, man. It's addictive. So.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier in the show, that, you know, somebody asked me, how do you think the Preds are going to be this year? I have no idea, but I think they're going to be fun to watch. They have been fun to watch, and obviously they've been good too.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. in that, and I just hope that it can continue to go that way, and I feel like it will. I mean, how many times have you seen teams have that season-defining moment, and 9-2 was a humbling moment, like humbling.
Was that game?
Yeah, right. I mean, but it's like I look at that as these are pro athletes, you know, that have done this for a lot. You know, some of them have done this for a long time, and they got beat 9-2 at home. And it's like, that's humbling. You wake up, you got blood on your face, you know, on your lip, but I mean, you've been humbled. And then it clicks.
They won the next game, right?
Yeah, that was the start.
Because
Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett had said, look, we were going to Vegas early to go to a YouTube concert.
Yes.
We're not doing that anymore. I don't like how we're playing. And it turned it around.
That's right.
And so I fully expect when the Predators win the Stanley Cup, you two to play a concert on Broadway.
They better for
everybody.
They better.
That would certainly be fun. But look, it's going to be a fantastic atmosphere tomorrow. I really hope that you know, that they can go in there and just continue their winning ways.
Yeah, without a doubt, man. Without a doubt, it's always good to see teams in the city win. So, and I remember all the talk and excitement about the Predators Stanley Cup year. Now, I wasn't there. It was the year before I got here. But
so you got here in 18, right?
18, yeah. I was 17. I remember, you know, everybody talking about, you know, how, man, this is a hockey city, man. Yeah. The Predator city. And, yeah.
Well, and I mean, it became that. And you had Taylor Lewan and the offensive lineman, you know, chugging the beers and
throwing
everything.
Throwing
the catfish. I mean, that was – you know, you had Mariota was there as well. Now, they are going to have Jeff Fisher and the Cats there Tuesday night, which will be cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Cats. They're obviously going to have their games too, but I think it's going to be cool.
Absolutely. I want to be a part of that stuff too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Oh, yeah. You're all about
it. Use me.
Yeah. You're all about it. But, you know, Coach Fisher was in here the other day with Chuck McDowell talking about it. But, I mean, they're going big on this with the return of the AFL and Municipal Auditorium. And
it's dope, man.
It's going to be cool.
Yeah. You know, I worked out for it. I was very close to playing arena ball. Yeah, I worked out for the New York Dragons.
I mean, you can work out for them now. We're trying to get D-Mace to go do it.
Nah, 47 years old, like, no.
Well, D-Mace is sitting here going, at 50 years old, like, I'll go try out for the Cats.
Sam Phelan, I don't know if you saw him.
Yeah, I did see that. That was cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was cool. Look, it was cool that he did.
Yeah, I got to work with him on his running technique, man. It was bad.
Were you like, oh.
Yeah, he was kind of running like a drunk, a duck. I mean, dang. Like a
duck. Yeah, but, you know, I think it's going to be another cool thing for the city to have, you know, yet another pro team. You got, you know, the NFL, you got the NHL, you got MLS, and now you got AFL in town. The Sounds, you know, with what they do in you know, AAA.
Yeah, that's
just a
fun
good,
thing
good
to
place,
see, too. Yeah.
Good place to be. 3-point lead for Yale, 75-72. Auburn with the ball, 40 seconds left in this one.
3-point lead for Colorado, too.
Florida coming back.
Yeah.
Man, coming down to the wire.
Oh, they got a steal.
And Auburn just drove to the basket.
They called a foul.
So he's going to get the N1?
I think no basket.
No basket?
Yep. Two shots down by three.
He got fouled.
Oh, man. Two
man,
games
this is
that are really coming
both
down.
Games, like, down to the wire.
Yeah, both are coming down to the last 30 seconds within a possession here.
Had to stay in the studio and watch.
Yeah, look, I'm enjoying, like, doing the show with TD, but now, like, I want to watch this.
Yeah.
And I may have used the ESPN Bet app at some point on one of these games.
Download today. What a play.
What a play. That is for sure. I mean, think about this. You got two SEC teams, both games coming down to the wire. That basket should count.
Oh, no. He caught it and dunked it. It was a putback.
Oh, okay.
He was fouled before then.
Okay. All right. Florida at the line. Now it's a 2-point game, 99-97, 22.6 left.
It's going to be a one. Oh, he missed the free throw.
Make your free throws.
Golly.
I do love, like, you know, when the defense can make a play and you don't have to foul, but.
Yeah.
Got to make your free throws.
Colorado with a chance to go up four now, 14 seconds left.
Yep. It was 97-98. He missed a free throw. They didn't get the rebound.
Auburn, 33.6 left, makes the front end of the free throws. Now a two-point game.
I feel like I'm at a tennis match.
I know. It's like, you know,
you guys have TVs both on opposite sides. You're going back and forth, back and forth.
All right, one-point game for Yale and Auburn, 75-74.
Oh, he missed a free throw.
See, okay, Mike, I can hear it right now. Coach Tackett, if you're listening, it just free throws. There was one day he made the whole team, like all they did at practice was line up and shoot free throws, and practice wasn't over until everybody made their free throws. It went 3 hours.
Hey.
I mean, it happened.
Messed around and got a triple-double.
That's right. That's going to do it for us here on this Friday. Have a happy and safe weekend. Predators back at it tomorrow. Vanderbilt women's right now, they trail Baylor 35-29 on 94.9 The Fan. We'll talk. Jared will talk to you Monday. I'll talk to you at 9 on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.